Hello, hello. Welcome, everyone. It is the Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast number 45. 45 for those German fans out there. 45. There you go. 45. It is your host, Mario O'Brien. Mario, what is going on, my friend?
What's up? It's almost vacation time.
Can you almost smell the Jackson Hole in the air?
That sounds pornographic, but I understand. I get what you're saying.
I can smell it. I can get a whiff. Yes, coming off near record lows this weekend in our area in the Northeast. We're getting ready to head to Jackson Hole, which is our topic for the week. Check out all of our information, skibumpodcast.com. And I know I've teased it various times over the last few months, but the new website design is going up later this week. Before we leave for Jackson, the new website design will be up. It'll probably be about 85% good to go. There may be some issues, but it's going to be up. We want to show it off while we're on vacation to all of our fans of your and all our new fans out of our showcase website.
And our celebrity fans.
And our celebrity fans.
Which have yet to be named.
And may not be named until the next podcast.
Exactly.
Yes. So yeah, go there. SkiBumPodcast.com. Check it out. Hit us up on social media, facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast, instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast. Go on iTunes, subscribe, Stitcher, subscribe, rate us, let us know what you think, and do it.
The only thing I have left to say is,
Oh yeah.
You know what time it is. That sound means that it's time to talk about our weekly flavor.
Yes, the weekly flavor.
So, Brian, why don't we start with you? What are you drinking today?
What am I drinking? So, I am drinking a Sierra Nevada Southern Hemisphere Harvest Fresh Hop IPA.
Wow.
One might say that it is the second in the Sierra Nevada 2015 Harvest Series. Southern Hemisphere Harvest features fresh New Zealand hops, floral, citrusy, and intense, flown straight to the brewery days after growers picked them.
Days after growers.
I can't even believe this.
going out of your goddamn mind.
One thing is, I think this beer has been hanging around for a while, so I don't know if it's past its freshness. It's not bad. It's pretty good.
It's been in the beer cellar.
The beer cellar. It says don't store, drink fresh. I don't know if we adhered.
It's been cold the whole time.
I don't know if we adhered to those rules. Plus, I had a goddamn sip of sunshine on Monday. That's like the default beer now. And after drinking those beers, Heady Topper, Sip of Sunshine, anything from Hill Farmstead, Second Fiddle, you just, like, what compares?
It's like, what did you do this weekend? I drank a few Headies, a few sips. Let's just
that's
throw them
the
out
new
there.
Default. It's We've gotten crazy. Too highfalutin in the last year.
It's
I'm
a little,
telling you.
Yeah, we're way up there.
It's tough to meet our standards these days.
Well, I'm bringing my standards back to normality.
What you got?
Because I am drinking a Kona Longboard. I love this beer.
Kona Longboard.
Love it in the summer. I love it in the winter.
I think the first time I ever had one of those, I was sitting in an airport in Honolulu waiting for a connecting flight to Kauai.
Really?
Watching the Yankees, and I think it was the ALCS in 2009 on Andrew and I's honeymoon.
Wow.
And it was probably one of the top five most delicious beers at the time.
It's really good. So it's an island lager. It
is it ever?
Just like a normal lager. It has a nice, smooth taste. Very, not really overpowering in any way.
Is it actually brewed in Hawaii, or do they make it in like Milwaukee?
They probably make it somewhere else. Just the original. They probably make some in Hawaii.
It says Kona and Portland.
Portland.
And Woodinville, Washington. And Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And Memphis, Tennessee.
So they can get it to you fresh. Use the same recipe.
Yeah.
So I'm reading a book. The name of it is called Proof, the Science Behind Booze. I think it's the Science Behind Booze or something like that. But got an Audible, and it's great because it talks all about the brewing process, the difference between like
lagers and ales, IPAs, what distinguishes them from each other.
And the good part is they say how hard it is to brew the same beer over and over. That's why these big, you know, giant breweries and even the small breweries, they use a lot of the same stuff that's like been cryo frozen or whatever just to make sure they come out that same product.
That's not what the Alchemist and Lawson's Finest do.
Actually, Lawson's brews at other places too.
They do brew at Two Roads in Connecticut, yes.
That's what I'm saying. True. So they keep that same thing going just in a different location.
That's true. Yes, but you know what? If you got the good recipe and you can do it right, I ain't gonna be mad at you for that.
I ain't gonna be mad.
I ain't gonna be mad.
You could try.
Yes. So,
it's time for little ski news.
Yes, that is the new official ski news music. So, first up on, I believe this was from Sunday, 48 people evacuated from Cannon Mountain aerial tram. So what happened, 48 people were evacuated from two aerial trams at Cannon Mountain in Franconia, New Hampshire, after a suspected problem with the service brake caused the lift to grind to a screeching halt. 41 people were in the lower car, with seven in the top. The groups were mostly skiers, but a handful of sightseers were also on board, including an eight-month-old child.
Wow.
Oof. Yeah, people who were on the thing said they felt a severe jolt before the tram stopped. Everyone was very calm, and that people did not panic, although there was a little bit of screaming. Passengers were lowered through the floor of the tram. No one was injured in the process. Cannon Mountain states that it thinks there was a severe problem with the service brake, which is the suspected culprit for the incident. The extreme cold streak in New England is not cited as a factor for the stall. So it was cold as shit this weekend up in New England. I think it was Killington was reporting like highs of like 1 degree. Really severe wind chill.
That's pretty bad.
I think wind chill was like, the real feel was like minus 20, 25, something like that. It was really bad.
That's horrible.
I think that was at night, but it was super cold. But yeah, I don't, I've never been stuck on a tram that's been evacuated. Have you?
Never. And hopefully, knock on wood, I never will be. It's the most I've been stuck was on a lift for maybe half hour, 40 minutes.
That is a long...
It was a long-ass time.
Goddamn time.
It wasn't an hour and a half or 45 minutes or...
Yeah, we had a friend in Tahoe this past year who was evacuated. We have another buddy who was on a chairlift, evacuated, I think, a year or two ago. So it happens, you know? I mean... You got to just be thankful for every time you're on the thing, on a lift, a tram, a gondola, whatever, and there is no incident because there's a lot of moving parts up there.
See, the problem for me is I'm grateful, so I always thank the heavens when I'm on it, but then I think, like, holy shit, this is scary. So
yeah, I mean,
stop doing that to myself.
You're 120 feet up, yeah. You know, over like a
ravine.
I can
do it when I get off and be like, you know, now I can think about it then. You know, that's what I got to try to do.
Yeah, the key is to be either low enough where you can jump off or high enough that if you fell, you wouldn't feel anything when you landed. It's that middle ground where you can like shatter like 80% of your bones.
You're going to still feel it though, no matter what.
And sometimes it lights out though. You know, like we were talking before about,
it's that,
you know,
split second that you're going
to
feel it.
We were talking about gondolas and trams before, and the one up at Whistler Blackcomb where it's the peak to peak. I mean, there's a part, I mean, I don't know how many thousands of feet you're up, where if that thing just all of a sudden cut out and dropped, you would just be in panic mode, terminal velocity, and then splat. Like, there's no way you're walking away from that one.
Well, but then it's like a Vin Diesel movie. You can, like, parachute out or something like that, or wingsuit out because you hit terminal velocity. There's something to it. You got time to fall, so you could do some cool, crazy stunt.
Yeah.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory. After you shit yourself and clean yourself up and get yourself out there.
If you're next to Jason Statham, you're fine.
Well, the Stath, yeah, that's a whole different story.
You can
yeah.
figure some way out.
I mean, we've all seen the Crank movies. You know, we know what he's capable of. You can't right. kill that guy.
You can't kill him.
It's incredible.
He's on Craig.
The Stath. All right. What's all right. next?
Next we have Colorado State University is now offering a graduate certificate in ski area management. Now, I took a graduate certificate program for project management, and this looks exactly very similar to most certificate programs. And I tell you what, I like the area, the idea that's focused on ski area management.
And it's all online, too, the whole program.
Yes.
Which is really nice.
So this is something you can do, like, you can complete it, they say, in 9 months. And I guess that's taking, you know, all the credits, like, one after the other, or you could just stretch it out. $700 per credit. So school has gone up a ton.
Yeah, you're looking at close to 10 grand. I think it's like 8,400 or something for this class.
I mean, you could break it out over like 2 years. That's not too bad and manageable if you have another job. But I like how they say what you could learn how to do. They have a listing in there. But, you know, they say whether you already work in ski industry or aspire to do, So this program will provide you with the skills needed to succeed in all types of ski resort operations and management roles.
Including working at the chili counter.
That's right. So it's funny because I had some things pop into my head while I'm reading some of this. They said, meet this growing demand by learning how to balance priorities and manage ski area operations that are sustainable on every level. Balance priorities are going to be showing up to work or skiing on a powder day. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's required in the ski industry to really get to management level is to not show up to work high.
Right. You'd or to show up to work.
You'd think that would be kind of a given anywhere else in any other industry, but I think in the ski area management, that's like a huge factor if you can pull that off.
If you pull that off, you're ahead of a lot of people.
You're looking at high-level management in like 6 months.
Easily.
Yeah.
Apply analytical skills to employ sound financial practices.
Anal.
Wow.
That escalated quickly.
Develop positive community and stakeholder relationships. All right. Hey, man, what's going on?
Yeah.
Operate with the...
Selling, is that like selling weed to like people?
They're stakeholders in this community. Operate with the conservation of natural resources, weed, and protection of the alpine environment in mind. Hiding out in the woods and smoking weed.
I like it, yeah. Flexible online format. That's a big positive.
It has everything to do with wanting to work at a ski area. So,
and then it's cool. There's like a part on the site where it talks about career opportunities, like what you can get, you know, the kind of jobs you can get if you complete this.
I think I'm going to try to get this.
Why? You know what we should do? We should just like, I wonder if we could like share the course.
Well, they have where you can audit the course, right? And you just sit in.
Yeah, right.
To say I'm going to audit the course.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it has a couple of guys they interviewed who I guess have gone through the program or helped develop it, talk about the jobs that you can get, and we'll post on the website so you can go take a look and watch it for yourself because, you know, we're not going to tell you all about it because you can go and check it out and get
more information. Always opportunities out there.
I'm telling you, yeah. I mean, this course seems pretty cool. If you want to drop, you know, $8,400 to do it, that's awesome. It's even better if you know somebody who already works there and can get you in. That's way better. Then you can take that $8,400 and spend it on rent or a condo or new skis or tons of weed.
Sticky icky.
Or a little weed biz on the side. Buy some seeds. Grow them. Sell them.
If you had a weed biz on the side, you could afford that $8,400. No problem. You like Heisenberg weed.
But why would you pay for the course then? If you're already the Heisenberg weed, you don't need to spend $8,400 for a ski bum or a ski area management job.
But we should change it to a ski bum area management. Boom.
Ski bum.
We can give you a ski bum degree online.
We should get certified. We should have some sort of like certified like University of Phoenix.
Create ours.
University of Ski Bum Service.
They gave Bill Cosby an honorary doctorate.
Oh, did they ever?
That's in roof.
Pharmacological?
Roofie management.
Yeah.
So. All right. What else we got?
All right, so here's a fun one. Whistler Blackcomb announces new $8 million investment plan. So they announced during a quarterly report last week that the ski area would invest $8 million in the upcoming year. And now we have some details on the plan.
And Whistler's already kind of nice as it is.
You can get by. They have a lot of amenities there, that's so for sure.
$8 million on top of a place that's not a shithole is a lot of money.
It's a lot of cash. So they're going to improve the ski and snowboard learning areas on Whistler Mountain by doing earthwork in the Olympic Station area to open more beginner-friendly terrain. Aw. You can expect two new covered magic carpet lifts at Olympic Station. Aw. Olympic Station will also get 25 new energy-efficient snow guns. Upgrades to the Roundhouse Lodge Glacier View deck will include a new 6,000-square-foot patio, a new heated umbrella bar, and 160 new outdoor seats.
Boom, that's the moneymaker.
That's really cool. So
that's the moneymaker right there.
So if you hadn't busted yourself up and actually gone on your Whistler trip, that's the Roadhouse Lodge is the big gondola from Whistler up. That's where you go to.
It's
kind of mid-mountain-ish, and there's other lifts that go, but that's like the big gondola from the village up to the mountain.
Nice.
And it's huge. It's awesome. We did a thing. It came with our lift pass that if you go, you get there at like 6:30 in the morning, you can take the gondola up early, and it's got breakfast included up there.
Nice.
And it's like a big, full, like buffet breakfast, and it's got, you know, glass everywhere, kind of like the Peak Lodge of Killington.
Yeah.
Just, you know, lots of glass, lots of amazing
bigger
views
with
the mountain.
And not with a lot of douches there.
It's way bigger.
Less douchey.
There's plenty of douches, just there's way more space for the douchebaggery to get be spread.
Oh.
Think about if you had a little tiny Spinal Tap piece of bread, like the little tiny, you know, 2-inch by 2-inch bread, or a standard, like regular piece of white bread. And you had the same amount of Nutella between the little Spinal Tap piece and the regular piece. The Spinal Tap piece is like the Peak Lodge. You can only spread that Nutella so much. The Roundhouse Lodge at Whistler is like the regular piece of bread. A lot more space to spread that Nutella.
So it's like the douches.
It's just the douches spread wider.
So it's like if the douches were a fart, that fart being in a little tiny closet versus being in a giant stadium.
Bingo. Ipso facto, you got it.
All right.
Also,
160 new seats. That's pretty big.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
6,000 square foot patio.
That's a nice size patio.
Giant.
That's really huge.
Wow.
And a heated umbrella bar. That's pretty awesome, too.
That's pretty crazy.
Also, the Garibaldi Lift Company restaurant, one of the top places to get a drink post-skiing, will receive a renovated patio, a small expansion, a new roof, and new heaters and fire pits. This will add 90 outdoor-covered seats.
Wow.
Summer enhancements include improvements to the Harmony Lake Peak Express Traverse and Whistler Summit Interpretive Walk Hiking Trails on Whistler Mountain and the Alpine Walk Hiking Trail on Blackcomb Mountain.
I got to look up what an interpretive walk is.
It's like interpretive dance, but for walking.
So what do they do? Like all this weird
thing? And finally, the Samsung Alpine Theater will be expanded and relocated to the lower level of the Rendezvous Lodge on Blackcomb. So, yeah, a lot of expansion going on at Whistler Blackcomb. They're having an epic year this year. I think they lead North America in the amount of snow they've gotten, like well over 300 inches of snow so far this year. So they're definitely making lots of cash up there, and they're putting it back into the resort, which is always awesome for us skiers and boarders.
Wow. So I guess an interpretive walk is like you go through different areas and experience sounds and smells and sights.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
Still don't understand the terminology, but I'll go with it.
Nice. You know what? I'll grab this next one, and you can do the final one, because I know it's near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
So just this past week, Uvex, the goggle company, just came out with a pretty sweet new pair of goggles. It's the Uvex Snowstrike Variotronic Goggles.
Wow.
So the big thing about these is the lenses adjust to light conditions, which is pretty cool. So
it's not just light or dark, right?
No, that's the crazy thing. So it's designed to adapt to ever-changing light conditions on the mountain. The lens of the Snowstrike changes colors in less than 0.1 second. Sudden fog patch or steep slope, no problem. The clear lens changes to the red lens, increasing contrast. A neutral blue adjusts for bright conditions, and violet adjusts for sunny days that can create snow reflection. And if the tint doesn't change fast enough for you, there's a switch on the goggle strap that can be manually adjusted anytime. So if one day it's going to be bright out and you don't want it to change too much, boom, put it on the purple. If it's going to be foggy or gross, put it on the clear. These seem really, really sweet.
They look really cool.
The one thing that is a little bit, the first thing that's kind of one of the downsides to them is that they're $500, which is not cheap.
They're out of stock at backcountry.com.
Are they really? Wow.
Yep.
Another one of the small negatives is that you have to charge them with a mini USB to keep them running. But one charge does last for like 50 hours, so you're good to go for a couple days of skiing. But these seem really, really cool.
All right, dude. Amazon has them.
Yeah.
One new from $983.
God. But does it have Prime shipping? Can I get it in 2 days?
You can't get it in two. They should include free next day shipping for these, if that's the case.
Yeah. So these seem like dynamite goggles. I mean, in theory, they do.
They look freaking awesome.
They look very German. They're very kind of. They look very purpose built. They're not like Oakley tends to be a little more artistic and flashy and cool looking. These seem very German, very simple, they're elegant but simple.
German.
These lenses do sound really, really cool. And you know what? It could be one of those things where this is like the first company to do something like that. And they have like the transition lenses, which are okay.
Yeah.
I know I have glasses that have transition lenses, and it just takes for it. They they transition to dark pretty quick, but to go back to light takes forever.
Really?
Yeah, when you go inside after being in like the sun, it'll take probably 5 minutes or so.
Yeah,
for them to come back to normal.
I have ones for biking that I wear, and they switch pretty good.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, not instant. Like these are like really instant. I would say within like 4 to 6 seconds, they're flipped.
Now imagine you give these to somebody, and you just gave them like a pot edible, and they put these goggles on.
What's going on?
Would it be like more like would they take the light more into effect?
Psychedelic effect?
A little like a trippy effect? Yeah.
I want to find out more about the technology because it's pretty cool.
It's really cool. There must be some sort of sensor in there that, which is what that micro USB is charging, that requires it to be able to be powered to make those changes every 0.1 second.
Well, you've seen where they have, like, if you have a conference room with a glass wall, mm-hmm. they actually have mechanisms with special glass where you can actually turn a dial. And it actually sends like an electric charge through the glass and it fogs it.
Right.
So it might be something like that where it's like controlled, like, because 0.1 seconds is rocket fast.
Really quick, yeah.
That can't be like just naturally waiting for something to change. I'm wondering if it's something like that.
Yeah, those are so cool. So we're gonna do our best to see if we can get UVEX to send us some of these because we'd love to try these out and give you guys a full, honest, upfront, keeping it real, highfalutin ski bum review.
Keeping it real.
But, yeah, we'll do our best to make that happen, which would be cool. But, yeah, these sound dynamite. So, UVEX Snowstrike Variotronic Goggles. Check them out.
So, next we have a story that's near and dear to my heart for many reasons.
You wish it was a little more near and dear to your heart.
Exactly. The Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue came out. And this year, SI got Ronda Rousey, Carolyn Wozniak, who's a tennis player, which is a very beautiful tennis player, and Lindsey Vonn.
Lindsey Vonn. That's why it's ski news.
So they actually got him in the issue, but they're all wearing body paint.
Hello.
And I got to say, they are gorgeous ladies, very great bodies, and it was really cool to, like, online they have videos of them, like, you know, what they go through. So they're talking about, like, they're sitting there for like 15 hours while they paint in incredible detail. These, like, they look just like a bathing suit. So it's pretty cool to see, like, what.
Yeah, weren't they showing them, like, originally they wore the actual bathing suit?
Yeah.
And then they took it off, and then the artist kind of, they had it hanging up there, and the artist painted on what the bathing suit looked like.
Crazy. Yeah. And it wasn't just one. It was like a team of women, like, women on them, like, just painting, like, to details, like, incredible details. They did get close and personal, and I guess it was waterproof paint because they were, like, in the water. I was like, isn't that going to wash off?
Yeah. But
no, didn't.
It's like car paint. It's car like paint. Mako.
Yeah. A little Krylon. But, yeah, so if you get a chance, if you haven't checked it out already, I'm sure it's all over the internet, and it's in the magazines as well.
I'm surprised they didn't make Lindsey Vonn ski in the body paint.
You know what? The cat suits are so sleek, you probably could get away with painting yourself up and skiing. And
that would be so funny if she, like, went up to the competition and it was like, she's not wearing the cat suit. She's going body paint.
She's going to body paint. That would be cold. And actually, that stuff keeps everything together.
Imagine falling.
Oh, no.
Oh,
that would be bad.
I was a dude, it'd be even worse.
Just oh, my God.
Scrapage.
Yeah, you catch it.
Get a little ice up in the hole there.
The sharp ski?
Or, like, hit a slalom flag?
You don't want anything sharp around that area. So, like, a sharp ski just coming anywhere in contact
close. Like hitting your pole? Like, just dropping your pole?
Oh.
And then just...
Oh. Or hitting one of the gates with its flapping?
Slalom?
That could happen to some of us. I don't know about all of us.
And it's cold, you know? It's the one good thing about being cold. Things are kind of turtling up.
George Costanza turtling up.
Doesn't you know about shrinkage?
Love that show.
All right.
So next...
that wraps up the old ski news for the week.
Wrapping up the ski news and moving into... What was that new music for our weekly topic?
That's right. And this week's topic, coffee is for Corbiters. That's right. That is a reference to the Glengarry Glen Ross film, which hopefully you've all seen. There's a quote by Alec Baldwin, who's this, like, master salesman. He talks, you know, I guess it's Jack Lemmon's character who's trying to pour some coffee.
The whole scene, like, is great.
Yeah. What are you doing? Put that down. Coffee is for closers. Yeah, if you haven't seen that movie, I mean, that cast is unbelievable.
If you can't see the whole movie, the movie's great. It's a little slow, very well done, great actors. It's a really good movie. But if you just want to see one scene, look up. It's got to be on YouTube, at least just the one scene with Alec Baldwin where he comes in and talks to these salespeople.
Yeah.
It is freaking classic because it emulates everything like sales is about and just like just somebody just berating these people. It's great. Oh,
it's beautiful. Yeah. Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross. It's fantastic. So the reason we're talking about that is because, yes, friends, I know we've said it 15 times already in the last couple weeks, we are heading out to Jackson Hole, Wyoming on Saturday, which this is coming out Friday, so by tomorrow we will be on board the lovely flight and heading out to Jackson.
Yeah!
So we're just kind of going over a little bit of research. We've got a lot of great tips from all you guys. Thanks for sending them in. Please keep them coming because we will be checking everything while we're out there and trying to just make sure we do everything, see everything, experience everything we can while we are out there.
And so, thanks again, everybody, because we did get a lot of feedback from friends and people online to, you know, as to recommendations, and we actually took some of those recommendations to heart.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff. We actually made some reservations already for a tour that we're going to be doing, and for a bunch of restaurants and places. So, yeah, thank you guys for sending that in. We appreciate it, and keep them coming, like I said, and we're just going to go over some of our highlights, some of the things we're looking forward to, just some of the things that we're, you know, getting psyched about, helping us get fired up for this this trip.
Dreams and plans kind of thing.
Dreams and plans, thoughts and prayers.
So let's talk about, first off, making plans. Like, we were talking about a lot of different things. A lot of people recommended, you know, backcountry is supposed to be great, side country, backcountry, you know, whatever you can do.
Well, you know, let's start off. Let's start off from, like, deep down. Let's get some of the basics. So we're looking at Jackson Hole, the mountain itself. So the mountain itself is actually two mountains, Après-Vue and Rendez-Vous. There is 2,500 acres of inbound terrain. The vertical drop is 4,139 feet. So all you East Coast skiers, Killington peak is 4,241. That's the peak, and that means that the vertical drop at Jackson is pretty much Killington to sea level, which is pretty amazing, if you ask me. Base elevation, 6,311. Summit elevation, 10,450. The uphill capacity, this is an interesting number, 17,833 skiers per hour.
How many you can chuck up on top of the mountain?
I guess. And this is a crazy stat. Open backcountry gate system accesses over 3,000 plus acres. I mean, that more than doubles the resort.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
And the best part of that is there's not a lot of hiking.
Indeed. And there's 133 named trails on the map, 50% expert, 40% intermediate, and 10% beginner. So if you're a noob, if you're just learning, I've heard it's actually a very nice place to learn, but it seems like terrain-wise, you really need to know what you're doing out there.
If you're going there to learn, you're getting taught by expert and intermediate skiers at the minimum.
That's true.
There's no beginners teaching beginners.
A lot of steeps out there, though. So, I see it could be very daunting for someone being a beginner. You know, you look at the mountain and
stay to where you feel safe.
Yeah. Also, you could just not be a pussy and just step it up.
That would not be recommended by me.
We have
somebody that's gone through that, I would not recommend it.
Yeah, I hear you. I did that too once when I was like 12, and it was like the worst experience and kept me away from skiing for like 10 years.
That's how some people are like, fuck skiing, I'm never going to go back. Or boarding. It sucks, you know?
Like we've seen one of our friends do recently.
Yes. They're just like, I'm never going again.
Yeah, no, it's, they said they have great beginner system, but it can be very daunting. I could definitely see that being intimidating for someone getting out there for the first time. So if you are an expert or intermediate, this is probably a better place for you to be going. Thank God we're both intermediates now, finally, so we can take advantage of said mountain.
Yeah.
Lifts, they've got a 100-passenger aerial tram, the famous Jackson Hole tram, 1 8-packs high-speed gondola, 4 detachable quad chairlifts, 4 fixed-grip quad chairlifts, 2 double chairlifts, 1 fixed-grip triple chairlift, and 1 magic carpet.
Magic carpet,
right? Yeah.
So one of the things that we realized after we booked the trip was Jackson Hole Resort is in Teton Village.
Right. There's the town of Jackson.
There's the town of Jackson.
And then there's, yeah. There's
Teton Village.
Jackson Hole Resort is about a half an hour away.
I was getting to that. So,
sorry.
Teton Village.
Getting excited here.
Is where Jackson Hole is. And then if you stay in Jackson, it's like a half hour bus ride to Jackson. So you could take city bus or like hotel shuttle or if you drive. Now, Snow King is another mountain that is right in Jackson. So right at the edge of Jackson is Snow King. And I think that's where a lot of Olympic practice used to go on, I guess, when they had events or, well, you know, it's pretty steep, small, but looks like a pretty cool, chill place.
They call it the local hill.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, where the locals would kind of just do their thing.
So it's funny when we were like, you know, last year we went to a place where we were right across the street from the gondola, like, oh yeah, it's going to be great to get on. Now we're like, oh shit, we got to actually plan getting up early enough and getting the bus to get over there. You know, when we're gonna get over there. So
yeah, we've been spoiled the last few places we've gone, both in Austria and Telluride. We were, you know, we'd walk right from the hotel or the condo right to the gondola.
Yeah,
so this is more of a you know, have to get up, have to get on the bus, go to the place,
which is good. I think we'll get in a routine.
We're gonna have to. And the one nice thing is we are going west, so we're gonna get those almost like 2 extra hours every morning.
Yeah,
so it's gonna feel like getting up at 9 o'clock is actually gonna be 7 o'clock, which will be definitely to our advantage the first couple of days while we adjust to the time change.
It seems like they have a pretty cool bus system around town too. So like in the town of Jackson, like the bus runs free, it looks like, and then going over to Teton Village, I think it's like $3 or something like that a ride.
Which yeah, it's not bad at all.
And then most of the hotels run shuttles and stuff. So
yeah, and then also in addition to Snow King that you mentioned, there's Grand Targhee, which is right on the other side of the Tetons as well.
And that's supposed to be amazing powder. We have a buddy in our ski house that went. He said he didn't do it, but everybody on his trip that went to Grand Targhee to ski for the day said it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So it was great powder. He said he regrets not going and doing that when he was there. So that's an option for us still.
Yeah, it's a little bit further. I think technically it's in the town of Alta. But it's right on the Idaho border. And I don't know how to get there exactly. I'm sure there's some sort of... I don't know if you have to go into Idaho and then take the road up to there. Because it seems like there's only one road that goes across the Tetons there.
Well, I know somebody that hasn't read their trip packet because that was an optional prearranged tour.
Really?
45 minutes. I forgot how much it was. You'd sacrifice a day at Jackson because we have 6 day or five?
5 out of 6, yeah.
5 out of 6 day lift ticket, so.
And you are correct. I did not read my packet.
Did not read your packet.
I didn't print it out, though.
I don't know if it's in the packet or he sent the email separately, but about excursions when he sent that. But anyway, I think they said it was like a 40-minute bus ride or something, or 45-minute. And I forgot what the cost was. It wasn't too much. It was basically a little bit for the bus. It wasn't that much, and then the lift ticket. But supposedly it's really, they get a ton of power supposedly right there.
Yeah, I can. It's a little bit further north and a little. I guess it's almost like a tiny bit west. But they say in general, yeah, that whole area gets a lot of that Pacific moisture. After it kind of, I guess, comes in there, goes across Sun Valley, the same kind of snow as you're getting there. You're not quite getting that champagne powder you get in Utah, but it's a little bit colder. A little bit higher elevation, so you're getting that nice dry snow.
My buddy Gary was saying it's not that far if we wanted to go to Sun Valley for a day.
No, like, it's far. I'm looking at the map
far,
right now.
Dude, but he said it's you know, a few hours.
It's at least 150 miles.
Yeah, it's to Killington. No, Killington's 250.
Yeah,
so
I'm not...
2.5 hours.
That's not going to happen. It's an adorable thought. There's no way it's going
to
happen.
I'm saying if you really wanted to ski Sun Valley while you're there, you could do that for a day.
Just do another trip.
Yeah.
It just seems way too complicated. Because is there anything worse than having a freaking drive on your vacation? I hate, on a ski trip, having a drive during a trip is the worst.
Yeah, well, you usually got to get on a bus of some sort, right?
Yeah. I actually found it. It's $54 is bus only.
Right. And how far? It's what, 45 minutes?
About that, yeah. But you can do cat skiing there, too.
Boom.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's some other skiing options if you don't want to, you know, if you're bored with Jackson Hole and you're bored with Corbett's and you're bored with, you know, the whole scene there. You can either go to Grand Targhee, you can go to Snow King, or you can drive out to Sun Valley if you're a psycho.
Nice.
Yeah. Or you can go to Bozeman, Montana.
Bozeman, about the same. Montana.
Big Sky is roughly, I think Big Sky is actually closer than Sun Valley is.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So other things in Jackson that we were excited about. So, of course, you know, being what we are, we were excited about checking out some of the new, some of the local beers out there. That's a big thing for us. So the Snake River Brewery is right there in Jackson. And doing a little bit of research, there is a Thai restaurant called Thai, T-H-A-I, Me Up, which is in association with the Melvin Brewery, which we have made reservations for. And the Melvin Brewery, based on our research, has some pretty legit beers. One that I'm hoping to get my lips on is the 2x4 Quadruple Pale Ale, which is a double IPA. And according to Beer Advocate, is a 95 out of 100. World class.
Hmm.
So that sounds delicious.
It's okay. Once you had Hetty Topper. I'm just joking.
You know, after Hetty Topper, it's kind
of... So we actually, before we did this podcast, we called over there, spoke to Catherine. She said, no, we're out of the two. We're almost out of the 2x4. She's like, you're going to have to get here tonight. So I said, I don't know if I'm going to make it from New Jersey, even with my private jet getting over there. will there be some if I'm there in about 4 or 5 hours? And she said, no, it's probably going to be gone.
Damn it.
Otherwise, we would have been right to the airport. So, yeah, we made our reservations. It was nice. People are pretty cool there. She was pretty nice. Everybody I've spoken to at the resort so far has been pretty cool.
Even the high guy who called about your skis?
He was pretty high, but he was nice. He was just like, I don't know if he's high or he's just like, I got a paper and I'm supposed to call somebody, so I'm calling you. He's like, yeah, I'm going to bring your skis. Where, you know, where are you landing and where are you at? I'm like, you had no idea what hotel I'm in. Dude, are you looking at the reservation? So, I don't know. There's going to be somebody showing up at 3 o'clock with skis for me. So
nice.
I don't know what they're going to be because he couldn't even tell me what kind of skis they were. But
yeah.
His fallback was you could always switch them. You could switch them at the ski shop.
It's like, a beautiful thing.
Oh, okay. That sounds cool.
So I guess a couple of places that we have made reservations for that we're looking to check out. So we made a reservation at where?
Snake River.
Snake River.
Snake River Grill. And then at Tie Me Up.
And Tie Me Up. And then there's a bunch of other, like, you know, well-known après places that we're hoping to hit up. One of them is Dietrich's Bistro, which is at the Alpenhof Lodge, which is right on the mountain. You know, seeing as how we were in Austria last year, anything that's got... If they have Glühwein, we're definitely in. It's got a very, you know, Austrian, yeah. German, Swiss feel to it. It has the old school kind of lodge. So we're hoping to check that out. There's, of course, the Mangy Moose, which is kind of famous in Teton Village that we're hoping to at least get to once. And then back down in Jackson, the Million Dollar Cowboy Bar, which is like the ultimate, you know, shot in a beer kind of place. Which
The Jack is back.
The Jack is back. We got a few others too that we're, you know, gonna try to check out. Town Square Tavern, Nick Wilson's Cowboy Cafe, which I think we're meeting our tour guide at. Is that correct?
We are meeting our tour guide there.
Yeah, the Stagecoach Bar and the Handlebar. Some of the ones we're gonna try to check out.
I heard Pinky G's Pizzeria is supposed to be pretty good.
Oh,
Pink Garters, Pinky G's, they call it. And I guess there's a
look at you knowing the lingo of the locals.
There's like a show.
I like it.
It's like a little show thing there. It's like a burlesque. Like,
it's like Deadwood?
It's like a legit like Deadwood kind of thing. Ooh. Yeah, it looks pretty cool. White Buffalo, which we know somebody that is a member of the White Buffalo Club.
We do?
We do. And we're going to hang out with them.
We do.
We're going to hang out with them on Monday.
Oh.
McPhail's Burger, I think you said.
McPhail?
Supposed to be one of the good ones. The Gun Barrel Steak and Game House. That's the place I really want to go. I want to eat like a fucking moose right off of the grill or something. They have like an open pit like grill. Looks awesome. There's another one, but it's like a little bit outside. I think that's where the hell is it? Oh, I don't have it bookmarked.
Is that Wilson or the other town?
It's just out of Jackson. So kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm looking at that gun barrel menu. Yeah. Venison bratwurst.
Mm.
Bison carpaccio.
Damn. Ugh. I want to eat a buffalo.
You're definitely going to have buffalo. One place, I think it might have been that Alpenhaus, they had bison chili.
Nice.
How good does that sound?
There's probably going to be a lot of bison around. I mean, Yellowstone's right there. They got the bisons running all over the place.
Yeah.
It's a great place to raise them, so.
Yeah.
Eat some bison steak the whole time.
A lot of bison and a lot of elk.
Yes, they have
which are both amazing.
Well, they have a big elk preserve there, too, in Yellowstone.
Oh, I love elk.
Go pick one out and just eat it.
First time I ever had it was in Utah.
Oh, yeah?
Delicious elk steak. It was fantastic. Nice. It's really lean, and it's not that gamey. It's just like a healthy, almost like a healthy cow.
It's like the fish of game.
Fish and game, ipso facto.
It's like the fish of, like, grazing
animals. It's like
animals.
The salmon. It's like land salmon, pretty
land
much.
Land salmon, that's what it is.
Elk are pretty much land salmon with horns.
That's right.
That's what I'm saying.
Eat it like rare, right?
Yeah, delicious. Land salmon. So a lot of good places. And you mentioned Yellowstone Park. So, you know, we're probably most likely going to take a day off and a day off of skiing and, you know, find another excursion or something to do. And one of the options we have is to do a snowmobile tour to Yellowstone, which would be awesome. And there's other tours of Yellowstone as well you can check out.
We're going to wind up checking them out.
That's like the big hairy guys are there?
Yeah, so Old Faithful and the snowmobile tour, it's like 12 hours because you got to drive far in to get then to Old Faithful because it's way up there.
Yeah.
Oof. So you drive in like probably, you know, I don't know, an hour, 2 hour, hour and a half, something. And then you snowmobile like all day and you go to the geyser and basically come back. So
that seems really far.
It's, yeah, pretty far. But you get to see a lot of cool stuff. The only thing is a rest day from skiing, I might be pretty spent. So I might opt for the helicopter tour. I don't know.
That seems nice and easy, yeah.
Just do a helicopter tour.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different options. But it definitely would be awesome to go and at least check
and
it
again,
out.
And again, if I'm getting a helicopter, I should heli-ski.
That's true.
Just saying.
You can start seeing old... Maybe you can heli-ski Old Faithful.
Zip around Old Faithful and then drop us off to ski.
You can ski down Old Faithful.
Drop me in the middle of the geyser, damn it.
Boom.
I want to go right there.
Yeah, and Yellowstone is actually a giant super volcano, so if it does blow, we'll be at ground zero and we'll all be fucked. But we're hoping it waits a few million more years to do that.
That's what I'm hoping.
But you should always live life knowing that that super volcano is right there.
Right there, anytime.
And when it wants to end us, it will end us. So that's you right. Should live left to the fullest, have your 2x4 quadruple pale ale, buy those new skis,
so
whatever else you think you need to do before this whole taco truck ride is over. Remember that.
And we're back on food. See, I'm thinking food again.
I'm starving.
One of the things I like to do, so I use Yelp just to look at reviews, but now what I do when I go someplace is I log in and I start bookmarking places. And a good part of it is when you go to Yelp and you look at your bookmarks, and you're in the town that you've bookmarked, it just shows you on the map where everything is.
That's pretty nifty.
So it's kind of like you make your short list of where you want to go, and then you can guide you on that.
I didn't know I could do that. That's pretty nifty.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Pretty neat. Check it out. Because I've done it before in the city, so like depending on if you're different parts of the city, you'll just like, if you earmark a few places, you'll be like, all right, let's see where they are.
And it's like, ooh, Sbarro.
It's right here. Yes.
Delicious.
That's right. Ooh, a Subway.
So underground.
A Subway. Eat fresh. Actually, a lot of restaurants, rest day activities. So we're looking into all that.
Yes, we have a lot of things planned, but we're also keeping a lot of things open.
So
we're staying flexible.
One of the things that we'll mention briefly and marginally is, so we get there on Saturday, have our stuff. Sunday, go skiing. Monday, what do we feel like doing Monday? Let's go do a little backcountry skiing.
I think we have a backcountry tour.
We have a backcountry tour. So Sunday, we're going to get our gear. We're going to get our avalanche backpack. We're going to get our shovels, our
beacons.
So yeah. We'll all be set for bright and early on Monday. And we have a very special tour guide that's going to take us backcountry skiing.
Yes, we do.
So we'll talk about that later. We're keeping it under wraps even within our ski club because we don't want anybody kind of trying to get onto our trip, but
we don't want any usurpers.
We're kind of in control of our trip anyway. It's like a private guide.
It's almost like we're the Navy SEALs of our trip.
Yeah.
More like a, you know, like a hard, like a sharpened, honed sword.
Yeah.
Of the group. You know, like if the whole group is like the butt of the sword, we're kind of like the sharpened tip at the end.
We're like the Delta Force.
We're kind of like the Delta Force.
The Delta Force. We're going in there like goddamn ninjas.
We're special forces.
Special. In a good way.
If if the snow is Osama bin Laden, we're the one kind of taking it out.
Oh, there you go.
It's going all over its face.
So we should have a good, fun day, have some great stories to tell after. I'm looking forward to Monday. It's going to be, I think it's going to be epic skiing, epic company, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
The GoPro's going to be fired up. We're going to have some good footage.
We're going to have, like, I'm going to have to go rent some GoPros that day. I have, like, 12 of them on me.
Let's get a drone.
Oh, we should drone it.
Drone it up.
Oh, see, we got to look up into renting a drone. I actually ordered a new battery. It's coming tomorrow.
For the GoPro?
For the GoPro. I'm going to have just two batteries and switch that extra extended battery. It crapped out. So when I plug it in now, it doesn't charge. And then when I plug it in, it automatically turns the camera on. So you can't ever shut the camera off. It's just weird. So it's fried. I don't know if it overcharged or something garbage. Fried it. So that's no good. The GoPro is working fine. But what I'm going to do is I bought just a regular GoPro battery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just swap out the batteries in the GoPro.
That's a good move.
Which is the other way to do it. And then you just keep the slim case.
Yeah.
So I actually saw it online. And I actually have a charger that charges two batteries at once.
Look at you.
Damn, ready
prepared.
To go. Ready to go.
Prepared. So, yeah. So that anything else you want to talk about for Jackson? Or is that going to wrap it up about?
It's not going to wrap it up by far because I'm going to take some Jackson Hole predictions for the trip.
Predictions.
So what I like to do is before I go on a trip, I think I kind of do creative visualization to figure out how the trip's going to be. It helps me pack, helps me start planning what I want to do on what days, eating and resort things, and like how, you know, as the week goes on, like you start off, everybody's on your best behavior, and then the honeymoon ends around Tuesday, and then, you know, then people
everyone
start
kind of becomes around. Themselves.
Exactly. So that's where I do a little visualization to see what's going to happen. So Brian and I were talking briefly about it, but I figure we'll go through on here. So some predictions. I'm thinking, I don't know. See, every trip I've gone on with the ski club. Oh, no, that's only the international trip that they do the sledding, right?
Yeah.
There's no sledding. Sledding usually leads to at least one or two injuries. I was going to do a little prediction on that.
I think you were one of those two last time, weren't you?
I was one of those two last time. Actually, there are three people that got hurt last time.
Oof.
I just got a little nick on my shin, which has scarred over now. But that didn't slow me down.
Yeah.
Slow me down. I probably needed stitches, but stitches are, you know, chicks dig scars.
That's true.
But I'm thinking, so predictions. Are we going to have anybody not make the plane either way?
I'm thinking no going there.
I'm thinking one person. There's always one person that gets some crazy thing, like I can't go or I'll meet you out there, guys, or something.
Okay.
I'm thinking one.
Going home, I'm thinking three. I'm thinking carnage. I'm thinking people aren't going
to
make it.
They usually try to wait, but the guys running the trip this year, I think, are like, well, screw it. I told you guys when to be there. So,
like I said, I think there's going to be some carnage that will not allow folks to make the plane.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
I'm thinking three.
I usually don't like predict injuries, but how many?
Three.
Out of 45 people.
Yep.
Now, the jaded part of it, though, is we went with, I think it was 52 to Zermatt, and there was about five.
So that many?
Yeah. And I think there was like five people that got airlifted out. It was pretty messed up.
Yeah.
And then a few people that went home on their own.
Right, that's true.
So, our buddy Rob, he went...
Oof, that was bad.
Screw it, I'm
that
out.
That sucked.
I never like predicting that.
No. But you know what? I'm thinking a lot of my injuries are going to be booze-related injuries, not ski-related.
Okay, so our buddy Harry. We have a buddy...
Shout out to Harry. What's going on?
Shout out to Harry. What's up, yo? He likes to partake. He parties big. He goes big, or he goes home. And he just goes big all the time.
He rarely goes home.
I tell you that he's a party animal. and as you get older, you usually think it kind of people grow out of it, but no, Harry. He's he's not just like a party, just like all over the place, like we've seen some people that are just constantly in that mode. He's like chill, hanging out, you know, whatever, but he keeps it real. So
his ability to consume beer is becoming legendary around the world.
How many roadies do you think he's going to have before skiing?
Well, you know what? My concern for him is that 30-minute bus ride. I don't think he's going to roll into that sober at all.
I think he's going to roll on that bus ride with at least two roadies.
Yeah. One before he gets on the bus and two on the bus.
Oh, you're saying
I think he's putting down three beers before he even gets on the mountain.
Okay, day one, maybe not. He might be normal.
Yeah.
But once the honeymoon period's over and you see the real Harry, that's it. He's there to stay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like Tuesday-ish on he's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
But he's not a sloppy mess. He's just kind of like, what the hell are you doing?
He goes from super high energy to kind of quiet-ish.
The best is we go up, we ski with him at Killington a few weeks ago, and we wake up. He's having a beer. So then he's talking about bringing a roadie. We're like, I don't know, dude. It's like a five-minute ride to the mountain. This is at 8, 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
We get on the mountain, and we get on the first chairlift. He's yelling at everybody on the chairlift, just from the chairlift, just yelling, but encouraging things.
It was like if someone was like had like kind Tourette's.
he was just
you're better than that. Get on the different hill.
Come on, you can do it. Stay on this hill.
Don't give up. You can do it.
That's awesome. So, yeah, he's gonna be a handful.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you're saying three is the most?
I think three is gonna be his standard morning.
Standard morning. What do you think the most is? I think he's gonna hit like four one day. At least four.
And that could lead to him being one of the injuries, too, on the trip.
See, the problem is, like, he might talk me into hanging out with him and doing the... So, and I have a tendency to push, hey, why don't we do another? So,
yeah.
I could talk him into a few more.
Not that you really should, but yeah.
You know, just for shits and giggles.
That's true.
On the half day that we're skiing, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Wow, what else we got?
We were talking about ski club hookups. Solero. Ski club hookups.
Yeah. Inter and then extra, right?
Yes. There's a... My prediction for intra... Inter?
Intra or inter?
Inter, within the club.
Okay.
Four.
So that's club on club.
Club on club.
Club on club. So that's club on club.
Well,
sex.
Does me and Andrea count?
You know, married people I don't think count.
I don't think we count. No, because it just is.
As long as you're hooking up with each other.
Exactly. Unless we get freaky deaky.
So I'm talking people that are not married, not hooking up with
four.
Their spouse. Or girlfriend. That doesn't count either. Boyfriend, girlfriend.
Okay.
That doesn't count. So you're saying four?
Four.
That's kind of a pretty high number.
Usually
you get one or two. I'm saying two max.
Yeah.
And what do we consider hookup?
I'm talking even just kissing.
Oh, okay. Just kissing?
Then it could be like 15.
Wow. Now you're talking about... Four is a good number. I'd say three, though. That's just under.
Three?
Yeah.
Okay.
That you'll know about. See, that's just it, because everybody tries to hide, you know.
When you're keeping people on a bus at 3 in the morning, that's when you can't hide that shit, though.
That's when...
As we learned.
That's right.
Yeah.
Especially when you're late, because everybody heard something going on.
Oh, God, you could not hear it. Jesus. Yeah. It was like the scene from Zoolander where like, the little midgets are there and like she's all like, oh my God.
How about external to the club?
Oh man.
Club on other.
Six.
Six? You think that high?
It's the ski club.
Yeah, but you got to go by the actual confirmed versus the stories, because people tell stories.
Listen,
there's a lot of bullshit.
I'm a love optimist, as you can tell.
Yeah.
It is the Grand Tetons.
Which translates to
the big bosoms.
Big bosoms. So Grand Teton means big tit.
Yeah.
The big tit.
Yep.
So
Grand Tetons, wouldn't that be big tits?
Many tits, plural.
Many tits.
The plural tits.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's like Dre Tetons or whatever. Troy Teton. I don't know. It's French.
I'll give it to you.
Whatever.
You have me convinced.
There's three Tetons. There's
three.
The Grand, and there's... Grand is the big one, but there's two other big mountains there.
It's kind of like America's Matterhorn.
Good things come in threes. It's the power of three.
Power of three.
That's why three people hook up. Internal, three people hook up. External. Harry has three beers before he goes out.
It's the magical number, yeah.
He skis for 3 days hard.
Triangle. Looks like a mountain.
That's
three.
Right. Three.
Boom.
All right, what else?
The number of people who are going to do Corbett's. That's a good one. And then also, all right, it also depends on if Corbett's is open.
We do have. I looked at the club, the list that came out, And I skied with a bunch of people on the list, and then I met a bunch of people and talked to them at the happy hour that we had. Mm-hmm. I got to say, we're with an 8 crew. Like, yeah. These people can ski.
Legit skiers, yeah.
So, I mean, there's some that are like, you know, I would say out of most of the normal trips that we go on, there's a very small percent that are like, you know, beginner to intermediate, mm-hmm. where everybody else is like advanced to expert.
Right. So, well, again, too, that's what the mountain dictates. It's not, you're not going to Jackson to party. I mean, there's stuff you do, obviously, but it's not like known to be like the party town. It's, you're more there for the skiing, and then the partying is like a bonus.
Yeah. So I think we got an A crew. I'm saying 5 people do Corbett's.
5.
I'm saying 5.
I was thinking like 12.
Yeah, I think it could be higher, but I'm saying
it depends on the snow, totally too.
Depends on the snow, and there's a lot of people that are good skiers that are just like, I'm not going to go crazy, mm-hmm. but I know there's a few that are going to do it.
Yeah.
So, 12. I like the 12.
I'm going big.
I mean, it is 42 people, so if you play percentage, 1 out of every 4,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could go, I'll go in between. I'll go like 8.
8?
8's a good number.
And again, too, there is a giant asterisk next to that because of that you need it to be open, number one. And if it's looking craggy and rocky and more terrifying than usual, people may be like, yeah, I'm going to just jump in the bowl and get out of here.
Jump in the bowl.
Jump in the bowl. Grab a waffle up top there.
Oh, I love the waffles.
Get the waffles there.
Let's ski with a waffle.
Well, there's like a special waffle place up there. It's supposed to be really good, yeah. And it's called like... Couloir waffles or Corbett's waffles or something.
Oh, I get a waffle. I'm doing a couloir. You get a waffle in me, I'll do anything.
I'll do anything.
That and roadie.
Man, it's powered by waffles. It's unbelievable, really.
Harry is going to go down with a roadie eating waffle.
Mick Corbett's.
Corbett's.
It's a Mick Corbett's waffle.
That's right.
And then, and of course, our last prediction is number of times we will yell shrimp tree.
142.
I think that's pretty close.
Shrimp tree,
shrimp tree.
Or bread bowl.
How bread about bowl.
Bread bowl. Bread bowl's over under about 100 times.
I think combined probably 200. Yeah.
200.
Yeah.
All right. any fights on the trip?
Nope. It's all going to be love.
I think there's going to be some little spats.
Fights.
Not a fight. There's never fist fights. There's always just mean words going back. Mm. Usually there's like a few people that kind of meme.
Yeah.
Becoming friends and
passive
they leave.
Aggressive.
They leave, not friends. Let's put it that way.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we got a good crew, though. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome crew. Awesome people. We got some renegades that we know that are coming. My buddy, Nick and Liz, they're coming.
Is he going to true renegade or is he actually getting a hotel?
He's getting a hotel. It's not a true renegade.
That's renegade-ish.
He's a highfalutin renegade.
Highfalutin renegade.
He's also coming from the West Coast. We're coming from the East Coast. So it's, you know,
worlds
colliding.
Worlds collide.
It's going to be a beautiful thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Your buddy's coming in. He's having an epic week, and he's ending it there.
He's going all over. He's going to Park City. He's going to Wolf Creek, Colorado. They're going to, I think, Steamboat, Jackson Hole, and then eventually Big Sky and, I think, Sun Valley.
Damn.
So they're doing, like, a two-week trip, like, all through some epic places.
Jump on in with Big Sky and Sun Valley. Extend it.
Right.
Tell them to do it after Jackson, and then
that's where they're going after.
Yeah, change your flight to leave out of like Big Sky's $75 change thing and just go.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Bad idea. And then you bum with him. He'd be like, oh, now I'm crashing in your
room.
Boom,
I'm going to be staying in your Xterra tonight.
Like, that's right.
Yeah, so we got an awesome crew. We're going to an amazing place. They've had tons of snow. Hopefully they'll get more when we're out there. So it's going to be a great time. So thank you guys again for your tips. And we're gonna try to either podcast on the flight home, or maybe do a couple of mini ones during the trip, put them all together that weekend we get back, and have maybe a partial recap on the flight.
I think the minis might work.
The minis might work. Put them all together. But we'll keep you posted.
While stuff is fresh.
We'll be posting tons of stuff while we're out there. Look for our hashtag SkiBumWeek again. We're probably going to include a hashtag JH as well. So we'll have the two hashtags. And we'll be hitting up lots of stuff on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Check out our Grammy-gram. We're going to gram a lot of stuff.
We're going to gram it up. Yeah.
Between the videos and the photos, the gram is the place.
Yeah, and the redesign website, which is launching this week, skibumpodcast.com, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, and instagram.com/skibumpodcast. Hole. That's right. It is around the horn time.
Time for around the horn.
Mario, kick it off.
All right. So let's get started with a nice story about puppy-like objects.
Well, this weekend was the Westminster Dog Show. So dogs, very topical. Last week, Puppy Bowl.
Puppy Bowl. I didn't see Puppy Bowl. Did you
puppy
see
Bowl? Puppy Bowl was adorable.
Is adorable.
Adorable. Absolutely adorable. Well, it's cool, too. Like, they do it, and all the dogs that are in the Puppy Bowl are available for adoption.
That's
so they,
really
they try to get these dogs adopted, which is really sweet.
And you didn't even watch the Super Bowl. You just watched the Puppy Bowl, right?
This year, I actually watched the Super Bowl.
It was actually a good game.
It was a good game, and I won some money, too, so I was very happy about it.
I kind of fell asleep on the couch. We just got back from skiing and
well, last year I missed it completely. I didn't watch any of it, but this year I watched it and it was pretty good.
Yeah,
commercials were funny.
I fell asleep through halftime. I can't say that I'm not unhappy about that. And then I woke up, watched the third and fourth quarters. Great.
Like afterwards, like they had the whole thing about like Beyonce and the whole Black Panther thing, and I didn't know what was happening. Like I didn't understand that until the media blew it up. All I saw was all these broads with friggin' high heels walking on the field, thinking they're fucking up the field for the game. That was all I was thinking
about. And they had so many problems with that turf.
Oof, yeah.
So they needed like them not to be on there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't like the halftime show. They should have a show before or whatever and just play a goddamn football game.
It's always kind
of... I'm a purist.
It's always overdone and silly and goofy.
Yeah.
But did you have a favorite commercial?
They should let a rover go out during the halftime show and just start tackling
Terry
people.
Tate.
Terry Tate that
bring
shit.
Bring it back.
That's it. Rover. Rover. Everybody head on a swivel. Let's see Beyonce swinging, singing, just like looking. Waiting for Terry Tate.
Just taking out Bruno Mars.
Oh.
Did you have a favorite commercial during the Super Bowl?
I had a commercial that I remembered the most. That was the most disturbing commercial I've
puppy
seen in a while.
Puppy Monkey Baby?
It was Puppy Monkey Baby. I was just like, what the fuck is this? It's so disturbing. I will not forget it. But I saw it and I saw it again. And then somebody said, they were like, well, that's for Mountain Dew. And I was like, no, I thought it was for Monster. So I actually don't remember what it was for, but it was so disturbing. I know it was a drink of some sort, energy drink of some sort.
Some sort of terrible drink you probably never want to drink.
While it was catchy, it was just disturbing.
Yeah.
The Puppy Monkey Baby. I was like,
Puppy Monkey Baby.
God damn. That's horrible. And that's all they said throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, that's it.
So they did their job. I got to say, the ad company that came up with that, it was so messed up and out there. They probably just were throwing money at something and they said, let's come up with the Puppy Baby Monkey. And
yeah,
it was memorable.
It worked.
It was, I almost had nightmares from it. How about you?
My favorite was the Doritos commercial that everybody was like freaking out.
Which one?
About. Did you see it was, there was an expecting mother at the sonogram.
Yes.
And they're showing the sonogram on the screen and the father's like eating Doritos. She's like, really? You're eating Doritos at my sonogram? And I guess he brings the Dorito towards the baby, and the baby's like trying to like go after it. And he's like moving it around.
Reaching for
baby's
it
kind of reaching for it, and then he like moves it like toward where like her knees are, and the baby like starts coming out, and she's like she's going into labor, and people are like, oh, real clever Doritos talking about like aborting fetuses. I'm like, where do you get aborting fetuses?
Why do they go to that right away? It was just the baby was coming out.
That's... Yeah, people, everybody wants to be a victim. Everybody wants to make it about them. Shut the fuck up. No one cares about your blog. just laugh at the stupid commercial.
It's the new flavor, the Plan B flavor.
Plan B, it's like placenta flavored Doritos.
No, Plan B Doritos.
Well, I thought it was placenta flavored because it's really high. You know, got stem cells in there. It's good for you.
Now with extra stem cells.
Placenta flavored Doritos. Delicious. Who wouldn't want to make nachos with placenta flavored Doritos?
Stem cells. You're curing something with when you eat the nachos, right?
Placenta pino. Like jalapeno placenta Doritos.
Have with a placenta Rito.
With Mas. That's Taco Bell, but still.
There you go.
They'll make the taco shell from the jalapeno placenta Doritos.
They should make it from Puppy Baby Monkey.
Puppy Baby Monkey. That could be the meat. That could be the meat in the placenta jalapeno taco shell. Exotic.
All right. Puppy Baby Monkey.
So we kind of went on a massive tangent. That all started with the Westminster Dog Show and the Puppy Bowl. But yes.
So it was Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
I thought it was Monster.
Well, no, it was that kickstart. They kind of, remember like they decided like Mountain Dew was like, well, some people like caffeine in the morning, but they don't like coffee. So let's make this morning breakfast drink.
coffee-ish.
Like no, just caffeine and sugar and gross Mountain Dew flavor.
The Code Red. The Code Red was like...
Well, that was like real soda, like Mountain Dew soda. They have like 10 different flavors. But the whole Kickstart thing was for like a Mountain Dew breakfast drink.
Extra.
Yes. But like if you wanted like soda for breakfast, this was like a less, probably less carbonated, but still caffeine-fueled breakfast drink. But it didn't actually work. People didn't like it. So they had to kind of change the way they were marketing it, not as like a breakfast drink, as like something else. So I guess it's like a, it's what's the three things? Because I guess the puppy, monkey, baby is like the three things that are combined in this Kickstart drink. I don't know if it's like caffeine and
so
tastiness.
They put real puppy, baby, and monkey in it?
Yes. Which is where the electrolytes come from.
Damn.
You got protein.
It's what you need.
Protein, electrolytes, and caffeine, right?
It's what you need.
It's what plants crave.
Plants crave. So it's kind of like taking a Mountain Dew and putting that Stoke from, you know, the caffeine shot that they have to put in your coffee? It's
pretty
like
much.
Putting one of those in there.
It's like espresso, Mountain Dew, and fiber or protein or
I put
placenta.
Two of them in my coffee one time, and I thought I was like
having
gonna,
a heart
like,
attack,
die or something like that. Because the warning on it is don't have more than a certain amount per hour. I'm like, what is this thing that they're leaving here for me to just put in my coffee?
Stoke is for closers.
I was like, I could just put a whole cup of Stoke and just drink that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be not good. All right.
So the story. Long tangent.
So back to puppies. The most expensive dog in the world is a Tibetan Mastiff. So after the, you know, dog show, I think this was like hot on everybody's mind. So it kind of the way everything fell together timing wise. There was a guy, let's see where he was from. He was from...
Florida?
Florida, no. all right, so let's just go through. So what's the most expensive dog in the world? It's a red Tibetan Mastiff, which was reported as being sold for a whopping $1.5 million.
God damn.
Million GD dollars. So pocket change for the rich, but a cozy retirement for other 99%. So that's the 1%er sticking it to us all, saying, ha ha, I just bought a dog for more than you guys are making in your lifetime.
Broke-ass bitches.
Broke-ass bitches. And this dog's going to be live better and
this
eat
this dog's
going to
eat better than you ever did, yeah.
God damn. So it's an 11-month-old dog named Big Splash. So they are absolutely gigantic. For 11 months, he's not even full-grown. That's got to be a little bit left to grow. So they're saying when fully grown, they can weigh as much as 286 pounds.
Wow.
That's like a – that's heavier than I've ever been.
That's massive. That's like – yeah, that's no joke.
So
that's a giant dog. Holy crap.
That's crazy. So I guess the person that wrote the article said they have a 160-pound female English Mastiff who eats her out of house and home, which 160 pounds is big for a dog. I mean,
well, how
I knew
big is
somebody...
a Great Dane? Like Great Danes, they're lean, but they're big. They've got to be at least 180 big. Pounds, 200 pounds. This is like another 50% more dog.
Even so, some of those they're leaner than you think, so they're not as heavy. I mean, 186 pounds, that's a giant dog.
286.
So remember my ex-sister-in-law's big German Shepherds?
Yeah.
The biggest one was 110 pounds, and those are huge. That was 110. Can you imagine almost
nothing.
Double plus, like almost tripling that
extra dog and a half.
That's
yeah.
crazy. I mean, thing. It looks so. If you see a picture of this thing, like so, we looked for some pictures before the show, and they have a picture in this article. But then you look online for other pictures, and they have them like barking. And when this thing opens his mouth and barks, it looks like a freaking lion is going to eat you.
It looks like Cujo. It looks like a rabid dog.
It is crazy.
Yeah,
because the hair's all puffy and it's freaking things around. And it's like. And then you see it sitting there, like, oh, such a cool, chill
little
thing.
They look almost like St. Bernards, their faces. Like, imagine, like, a St. Bernard wearing a giant, fuzzy turtleneck. That's kind of what it looks like, because it has this giant, almost like a lion's mane that goes right up to his head.
Wow.
And I guess it depends, too, how they groom them, but they have this big, you know, massive fur. Because, again, they are from Tibet, and they're bred for, you know, for that mountain, cold weather.
Yeah, so they say they're native to Himalaya region, native, where the large size has helped protect flocks, towns, and people, including royalty, for over 5,000 years.
That's so cool.
Once upon a time, they were used as dogs of war, which I can understand, definitely. German shepherds were used as dogs of war a lot. Very good. So they're genetic ancestor to the St. Bernard, Great Dane, and Newfoundland.
Look at that, see?
So, yeah, the thing is definitely probably unhappy in a hot climate.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. I had a neighbor with a few huskies, and they were miserable in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
They would just sit outside saying, just splash me with water or something.
I saw one last week walking around in Hoboken, and it was, you know, probably 15 degrees out. And there's this lady walking her her husky, and the dog was beautiful. And it was just, like, stopping and, like, just, like, putting its nose in the snow piles that were still left. Aww. And she's like, come on, come on. And I was, like, kind of walking next to her, and she's like, I'm like, oh, after you. She's like, no, after you. She's like, she's going to stop and smell and, like, put her face in all the snow along the way. And I was like, she must be loving this weather. And she's like, oh, she absolutely is. Because, yeah, the colder it is for them, the happier they are.
Yeah, they got, like, a second coat or something that just keeps all the heat in. It's just, it's physically bad for them to be in, like, just hot. Like, my ex-boss had huskies also. She, in the summer, she put, like, a hose out there and everything. But even in the winter, she said they would want to sleep outside. They wouldn't want to come in. They're like, no, they're fine just sitting in the snow. They're like, yeah. I'm happy. What are you doing? But they actually said, they were saying the owner is, he's a wealthy businessman in China. And I guess it's chump change to him, so he really wanted the dog, so, you know, he got the dog. They were actually saying if he wanted to recoup his investment, which he doesn't want to do, he already said, he's like, no, I wanted the dog. The stud fees for that dog, they say, for as much as $100,000 studding. Isn't that crazy? That's like a thoroughbred horse.
Yeah, seriously.
And this doesn't run. Well, it runs, but it can't run a horse race.
I wonder what, I mean, and I guess, too, whatever female that it has, because the one that he bought is this dog that we're talking about, it's male, right?
No, I thought it was female.
The 11-month-old?
Yeah.
Big Splash?
Big Splash. Is it a male?
Well, if it's studding, then it would have to be a male, right? If it can be put out for a stud fee. Or is that just like another owner?
Yeah, I guess you're right. So it must be a male. It
must be a male. So you got to think, too, I mean, there's only a certain kind of female breeds that could probably even, I mean, it would probably need another.
Good Chihuahua.
Could you imagine the ruckus that would cause?
Oh, it would bring the ruckus.
It would split like that Chihuahua in
another dead Chihuahua. It was messed up.
Dead goddamn Chihuahua.
That is goddamn horrible. Holy crap. You could breed that with a horse.
Yeah, probably a small one, yeah.
That's crazy. I got to see, like.
Like a poor little, like dachshund. Just getting just decimated by this.
Let's get a size breakdown of this bad boy.
Yeah.
So they're saying the height of a male, 26 to 30 inches.
Jesus. It's 2.5, almost 3 feet. Yeah. 2.5 feet.
Yeah, it's pretty big. And big and fluffy.
Probably to the shoulders, too. Not the head.
Well, they're saying weight 100 to 160 pounds for a male and 75 to 120 pounds for a female.
What happened to 286?
So I guess that's a fat dog. Unless this is a freakishly large version of, maybe that's why it's a $1.5 million
dog. Maybe, yeah. It's got to be something special, like the LeBron James of Tibetan Mastiffs.
And you know, it's weird. If you speak to people that breed dogs, like I worked with a guy that was all freakish into dogs, if what they want to do is keep the breed pure, but when they find the anomaly that switches the breed into a new level, so if this is like a freakishly larger than normal, but still pure breed, that's like gold because now you're actually changing the breed.
Because you want the LeBron James and Serena Williams mixing of dogs.
Right.
Right?
But as long as it's a pure breed,
yeah,
that dog is it's good. And they actually check it for like, the way it stands and all the, you know, markings and all that crap. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty wild.
That's crazy stuff. So now if you're the kind of person who can afford a $1.5 million dog, this story will also be right up your alley. The first ever supersonic private jets are now taking orders for them. The supersonic jet maker Aireon recently announced that the flight service provider Flexjet has placed a firm order for 20 examples of the Aireon AS2 supersonic jet, for which the company began taking orders last year, making Flexjet the first fleet operator for the plane, the first publicly available supersonic jet since commercial supersonic travel ended in 2003 with the Concorde.
Mm.
So each jet is priced at $120 million.
So this is like your own personal Concorde?
Well, not exactly. Well, kind of, sort of. This model, the Ariane AS2, will carry 8 to 12 passengers in a 30-foot-long cabin and will travel up to speeds of Mach 1.5, which is 990 miles per hour.
Nice.
And have a range of 5,466 miles.
You better have Goose and Maverick in that fucking cockpit, because shit's going to go down.
Is awesome. So it's saying that it cuts transatlantic travel time by 3 hours and shortens trans-Pacific routes by 6 hours or more. So think about it. So we flew to Switzerland last year to go to Austria skiing. So what was that flight like? 7 hours going, maybe?
7 or 8. Well, was that with the time change?
Yeah. Well, just flight time. Just flight time.
Flight time. I don't remember.
I think it was like 7 hours. Because it was 9 going back. Because we were going against the jet stream. So if you could knock that off by 3 hours, from 7 to 4, that's huge.
Yeah. They're saying, so 7.5, 8 hours nonstop.
So 4 to 5 then.
That's huge.
That's a big difference.
That's about the drive to Killington.
Yeah. That's the drive to the actual mountain once you get off the plane.
We could do a ski share in fucking Switzerland. Think of that.
Think about that.
Yeah. Then again, if we own one of those, we'd own the house.
So. Yeah, I think you would own a few other things if you can afford a $120 million plane.
Well, that's like buying the $1.5 million dog and living in like a $200,000 house. You couldn't do it.
No. So imagine it's just you flying with your dog in this plane.
That's right.
That's all you really need.
You bought the dog. That's the
and
plane
enough
dog.
Food for the dog.
Even better. That's the plane dog. You have another dog for at home.
Imagine you were so baller you had two planes. One for the dog, one for you.
You fly separate in case something happens. One of you is surviving.
Exactly.
Because your entire state's willed to the dog.
Bingo.
Why wouldn't it?
Who else would it go to?
That's right.
Yeah.
Not your wife or kids. Going to the dog. Kids, you better butter up to that dog because... You better buddy up to Big Splash, because that's where your inheritance is going.
Yeah, right. So Ariane is saying that these planes are... the first flight is expected in 2021, and the deliveries of the jet are expected in 2023.
2021.
That is a long-ass time out.
There's a lot of rich people that want these. I believe they're going to be out there before that.
I'm just saying. We've talked about this topic several times. I still can't get over how there's no supersonic...
that you
jets.
Know of. Oh. Ultra rich people, I bet you have supersonic. They're just not talking about it.
Like, how does Elon Musk travel? I figure if anyone's going to travel the best, fastest way, it's probably him.
He has a teleporter, man. He doesn't travel. He doesn't fly. He's like, boom, I teleport one place to another place. It's there. It's just only for Elon Musk and Bill Gates and a few other people.
Yeah, I think he's going to have some special fancy plane. I mean, he has all of his rockets, but I don't think he's like... going to try flying in that thing yet. But it's only met. I mean, I still can't get over 2023 is when it's going to be available. That's like 7 years down the road. Who has time for that?
If you're a Zoolander, you're flying to one right now.
God damn it. I want international supersonic travel now.
That's right.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, get one for you and for your dog. $120 million a pop, no big deal.
So they say that they're partnering with Airbus too, right?
Yep.
That is going to be a big deal. If Airbus, they're saying to build a manufacturing facility.
Well, yeah, if you're gonna build, you know, make that many planes, because they're looking to put out 20 examples. You know, if it does take off and they're going to build more, they're going to need some sort of larger operation to put these things out, because you're not going to be, you know, putting them together in the backyard. You need a real legit commercial operation.
Yeah, well, think of it this way, right? So from like New York to London is about what?
6 hours.
6 hours?
Three.
So they cut that down at 3. That's huge.
Because
that's like a big hub for Europe too. Or to Germany, to Frankfurt.
Yeah.
Frankfurt. That's a big hub too. So they cut that down in half. That's
time
huge.
Is money, baby.
You get into Europe, that's why the NFL could be in London.
It may be coordinated with this, yeah.
NFL is going to have the first one.
Yeah, right. They can buy all of those.
That's when the world gets smaller, man.
They can buy all those with just the money they made off of like Doritos and Mountain Dew in the Super Bowl for those commercials.
They could have their own facility, their own factory.
The puppy monkey baby plane.
Puppy monkey. Oh, yeah. And you could have it run on batteries from Elon Musk.
Oh, Tesla plane.
Tesla plane.
Yeah.
Tesla everything.
All right. Next up. This is your story. This is a nice,
disturbing
happy
story.
feel good story about animals, right?
It's a very short story just to tell everyone to watch out for seals. They're a bunch of dicks. as much as I love seals, I used to love seals. There is some fucked up shit that goes in the animal kingdom. I tell you. Like, you hear about like stuff going on. So I labeled this story Hannibal Lecter seals are out there. Because there's one in particular. I think it's like a seal serial killer. So for the first time almost, I think, ever, marine biology experts have filmed an adult gray seal drowning one of its pups and eating it.
Oof.
Which is just on so many levels disturbing. So I'm not even going to talk about that. But then they actually did research to figure out. They said over the course of a week early in December 2014, they witnessed the same male individual doing the same thing to five different pups.
Yeesh.
So then they also did analysis around the area, and they said they found a total of 14 pups with traumatic injuries killed the same way. And they said because the way it was killed, I guess it was, I don't know, from what this thing did to it, I guess the injuries were like circular around it. So they had always attributed to the seals getting caught up in the hurt by propellers of boats. So they're like, no, it wasn't propellers from a boat. It was this serial-killing son-of-a-bitch seal out there. It was Hannibal Lecter thing. So they actually said it's not the first time the animal kingdom has seen seals like just act like dicks. They said 2 years ago, they said, and it's crazy, there was a group of seals responsible for wiping out hundreds of porpoises. So I guess they all got together, and it was crazy. It's like a genocide of whatever, animal kingdom. And they have also been documented raping penguins. Isn't that crazy?
That's just cold-blooded right there.
And maybe it was the Pittsburgh Penguins. I don't know. The way they play sometimes, you wonder.
It's raping poor Phil Kessel. That's why he's not playing so well. He's just all traumatized.
Don't bring a seal.
Seals.
You got to get another team that's the Seals.
There used to be the Oakland Seals back in the day. Yeah.
They got rid of it because of stuff
that
went on.
Because what happened to the poor Penguins? Yeah.
So that was just disturbing, and I was like, what the hell? Crazy stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, that's not a very happy story there. So seals are dicks, apparently.
Seals can be dicks.
Seals can be dicks. All right, next up, happier story. So, Top Gear. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's an automotive show that runs on the BBC Two, I believe. But here in America, we see it on the BBC America channel.
On the telly.
On the telly. So last year, there was an incident where one of the hosts, Jeremy Clarkson, allegedly punched one of the producers of the show. The other two hosts kind of stuck to him. They all got fired. Now they're doing some show on Amazon. But Top Gear is back. And they have a whole new cast. And the head host of the show is now Matt LeBlanc. And I'm sure a lot of you are saying, so fucking Joey from Friends is going to be the host of a car show? Well, you obviously don't know about Matt LeBlanc's biography. So one of the topics or one of the features they had on the show was they would have stars in reasonably priced cars. And every week they'd bring out some celebrity, and they would put them in this same little piece of shit car and take them around their track, and they would record the times, and they would list the times on their board there. So Matt LeBlanc actually had the fastest time of any of the celebrities.
Wow.
In their, I'm sorry, I think it was the Kia that they had at that time, or the Chevy. I think it was the Kia. So he had the record for the time. He's like super into like auto racing, into motorcycles. He's a real real gearhead. And I don't know if I know Mario and I were talking earlier about the show Episodes, which is a Showtime show. That
there's a nice car there.
He always has cool cars in that show, and he pretty much plays himself in that, like a kind of a
it's pretty fun
a scumbagged up version of himself. He's hysterical. He's a really funny dude, really interesting guy. So he's going to be one of the main hosts. They're also going to have Chris Evans, who's a big UK auto journalist, as well as female German driver Sabina Schmitz, veteran auto journalist Chris Harris, who is freaking awesome. He's an amazing car reviewer and driver. Former F1 team owner Eddie Jordan and UK journalist Rory Reed.
Nice.
So they just announced this last week. So they have a big crew. I guess they're probably going to have a couple people as the main core and then bring other people in. But
well, they used to do, when they did Top Gear, they used to do the show in the studio and then cut to like them out in like the countryside doing stuff, right?
Yeah, they would do different challenges or different features.
But the guys in the studio were a lot of times the same guys out in the field.
Always are. There's the three guys. They did everything.
So now with more people, they could have like one crew for the studio, one crew for the field. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. But that
maybe, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I mean, the show is supposed to start up again on May 8th. So they only have got a few more months for a 16-episode run. So I guess whenever they start filming, it's got to be pretty quick because that time is not too far away.
Yeah.
But it should be pretty – I mean, it's going to be a very, very different show. I mean, those, you know, Richard Hammond and Jeremy Clarkson and James May, they did it together for so long. They were so good together. I mean, you know, a lot of their stuff was a little bit predictable, choreographed, a little corny. But that show is just always fantastic.
It'd be interesting to see if they bring them back for like cameos or
no.
Guest
they're done. They're done. They have their own. They have an Amazon contract now. They're getting paid a shit ton of money from Amazon to do original programming.
Wow.
So there's no way they're coming back.
So now are they doing a car show on Amazon?
Yeah.
When's that airing?
I don't know. They were showing something about Clarkson starting to film soon, so it should be coming out in the next few months. So if you're a Prime customer, you'll be able to watch that as well, showing up on Amazon when that comes out. But they gave them, I forget what the deal was, but they got a monster contract to bring their show to Amazon.
Oh, they started shooting on February 10th.
There you go. Just this past week.
Wow. So they're ready to roll. They're going to roll through.
Yeah.
Amazon paid $250 million to secure the new version.
And of course, too, I mean, when they were on the BBC, I mean, that's all publicly funded TV. So they weren't making a whole lot of money. They're getting tons of publicity, notoriety. They did lots of other like side deals, like, you know, books and other programs and stuff. But they weren't getting big, fat American money like they are now. Now they're getting seriously paid.
Amazon's everybody's fighting for the content right now.
Content is king.
Just like this show. That's you want to buy us.
Yeah, if you want to buy us, if you got enough cash money in the bank, we may be for sale. SkiBumPodcast.com. Hit us up. SkiBumPodcast@gmail.com. We'll talk.
We might even take a dog in trade. I don't know.
It depends what kind of dog.
That's right. Yeah. If it's a $1.5 million cash dog,
we're going to put them at the stud.
I wonder if that shit's gold, that dog.
Probably.
Diamonds.
Platinum.
Something. Platinum.
So, yeah, so check out Top Gear when it comes out. I know. I will.
Cool. So
final story,
tens of thousands of sharks migrating off of the coast of Florida. So this happens every year, and every year it freaking amazes me. But depending on what's going on in the world right now, we got a lot of political crap going on. We got, like, you know, people fighting during debates, like shit going on. That's why, like, they're not focusing on like shark attacks and sharks. But this was
just like in 2001 when they had the whole big shark thing over the summer. The 9/11 happened, and like there was no talk of sharks for like a couple of years.
There's nobody running for office, so have the shark attacks. So you can't deny this story, though. So they actually, it's pretty crazy. They have video footage from the air of an estimated 10,000 black-tip sharks migrating along the shores of Palm Beach to Jupiter in Florida. So if you know, that's a pretty short distance from, you know, Jupiter is just north of Palm Beach. So it's really not a large area. And I guess they do the migration normally.
That's East Coast, right? Like Atlantic Ocean?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, Palm Beach is there, and then Lauderdale's south of that. Miami's south, further south. This was February 12th, so this was just last week, and they said the sharks are actually, like, if you look at the video and the photos, they're about six, almost 6.5 foot.
Oh my God, that photo is terrifying.
Sharks. And there's sharks everywhere. I mean, you can almost walk on the water on the sharks. God. So they have a footage from the air, and it's pretty interesting to see this happens every year. It's tens of thousands of sharks away from the shoreline. And it's kind of funny. People don't realize it's not, I guess, a big danger to people swimming, but you'll go swim in the ocean, and then another mile or two out, there's like these 10,000 sharks.
It's like Black Bike Week, but like like Black Shark Week.
That's right. It's crazy. Black Tip Shark Week. So one of the other funny things, so I was reading this, and I saw Florida Atlantic University. Now, my brother worked for FAU, and he was saying, I guess, one of the known things that they have there. The doctor that they were talking about in this article, he actually owns his own plane, which is kind of cool. So he's like flying his own plane, like taking this footage and studying the sharks and stuff. So pretty interesting to see stuff going on.
That's crazy.
Right in your own backyard. You never know. Because, you know, yeah. People are like, screw the cold. I'm going down to Florida. I'm going to hang out at the beach. I'm going to sit there all day. And there you are. And you don't even realize if you want to go keep swimming out like another mile.
Have fun with your sharks.
Sharks.
Ugh.
Just sharks hanging out.
Terrifying. That's not for us. We love our winters. We're going to get our skiing in. We're going to do our thing. We're heading out to Jackson this week. A couple days away. Heading out there. We're going to podcast probably live, either from... not live, but we're going to podcast probably in Nuggets during the week and probably a little bit on the plane and publish that when we get back. So...
I got to start... finishing my binge watching. What are you watching now? Because you told me about episodes, I watched that. Told me about Billions, I watched that, and I'm waiting for the next episodes to come on.
Billions has been tough yet because you got to wait for it. It's
when does it come on?
Every Sunday night.
Oh, so the new one must have posted.
There was one this past Sunday, yeah.
Which episode? Five?
Five, I think, yeah.
Fuck. I'm caught up.
Yeah, Billions has been really good. I need to watch that Making a Murderer, apparently, everybody says.
I've watched a few episodes. I don't know. I haven't gotten into that. Everybody's raving about Walking Dead again. They came out with they're doing a mid-season. I didn't realize they're doing like six episodes and six episodes split.
Oh, okay. I heard that People vs. OJ is really good on FX.
Okay.
That could be good. We just finished up American Horror Story finally.
When is House of Cards has to be coming out soon?
I think very soon. I think either end of February, early March.
And then April, we're talking...
Game of Thrones and Silicon Valley.
And Veep.
And Veep.
That's my hat trick right there.
And you know what? The funny thing is that...
I got to find a way to watch it.
That all starts when ski season kind of ends. End of April. Yeah. Wraps all up. At least on the East Coast.
That's the post-greatness phase of skiing.
Pretty much,
until
yeah.
It's the pre-greatness phase of skiing in South America. Boom.
Ooh, exactly.
Dropping that bomb, blowing your...
month or two off, and then head down to South America.
I got to take a trip. I have... I'm charting out trips for the summer, but we'll talk about that at another time. We'll see what's going to transpire.
We don't even want to say the S word right now.
All I know is I want to say the J word. Jackson Hole.
Jackson Hole.
Jackson
Hole.
We're
heading out there. We're going to figure
out... I can smell the hole from here.
Oh, I can smell it.
You can smell the Jackson Hole. You can smell the hole. Don't you be getting sick in here.
Oh, I think I have freaking super AIDS now.
I'm staying away from everybody at fucking work. They're all like coughing. You don't understand. We're an open floor plan, and there's people fucking sneezing and coughing on everything. And I'm like, just stay the hell away from me. I pureled my entire desk today.
That's a good move.
And tomorrow I'm working remote because I...
You should boy in the bubble it.
I'm going to boy in the bubble.
That's not a bad
move. Friday afternoon, I'm going to bubble that shit. Just boom.
Bubble it up, vitamin C,
bubble
zinc.
It up. That's right.
Can't touch this.
Now, you can get sick on the trip, but it has to be near the end.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to ruin that trip.
That's what whiskey does. Whiskey helps you fight that off.
I think I have to have some whiskey before I go to
work. Toughens your immune system up.
While I go to work tomorrow, I'm going to have some whiskey.
Not a bad move. So we're heading out to Jackson in a couple days. We're going to figure out our podcast plans. We're probably going to do a couple of nuggets while we're there. But we're not going to put it out until we return because we're not bringing out technology and computers. We're going to have our phones and our GoPros. We're going to be recording stuff. We're going to be posting highlights. You can go to SkiBumPodcast.com to check out what's going on. Check out the redesign. It's going to be live. Check out SkiBumPodcast. I'm sorry, Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast, Twitter.com/SkiBumPodcast, Instagram.com/SkiBumPodcast. Look for the hashtag SkiBumWeek. And
juicy pictures of our Monday out backcountry. That's all I'm saying.
There's going to be some goodness and some love out there.
That's right.
So guys, please, thank you so much for listening. Check us out, follow us, rate us on iTunes, subscribe, and stay tuned for the follow-up of our trip to Jackson Hole.
Stay hot, stay falutin', everybody.
See ya. Yeehaw!